And we have known the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God loveth his brother also. Our text for this morning, verses 20 and 21. I have entitled this message, The Confession of a Hypocrite. John makes a very strong statement here. He says, if a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. John does not mince any words here. This pictures a man who is continually saying, I love God. And at the same time, hating his brother. The present tense of hate shows an abiding and continual hatred. John says this person is a liar. This person is a hypocrite. His moral character is deceitful. A hypocrite hides behind a mask, hides behind appearances. And a hypocrite might think, to make such a statement, no one can find them out. He may think that there is no way that one can prove whether I love God or not. It can't be proven or disproven. One can claim to love God, but how can it really be validated? It's kind of like a perfect cover, they would think, for being a hypocrite. There is no way that one can discover the depths of my heart and know whether I love God or not. No one knows the true state of the heart. So a hypocrite can say, I love God, and think no one knows the better. Who can contest it? You don't know my heart. You don't know how I feel. You cannot make a judgment on me in this matter. God is invisible, and the state of my heart is invisible, so this is incontestable. But the Apostle John says, not so. Not so. If the way a person lives contradicts what he says, he is a liar. And that's what John is telling us this morning. When John writes, if a man says, he's making reference to the Gnostic secessionists. When he says, if we say, you know, in chapter 1, he says, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. If we say that we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us. Now he says, if a man says, he's making reference to what these Gnostics were saying, what they were propagating. And so, this statement, this assertion of John has a context. He's making reference to those that had divided the churches, to those false teachers that had caused such trouble. This is not a hypothetical situation in that sense. John is making a direct statement against these people. And evidently, these Gnostic secessionists that had caused so much damage were saying that they loved God, that they had a greater knowledge of God, that they knew God. Yet all the while, they were hating their brothers. They were showing this disdain and contempt for the believers that remained faithful to the apostolic doctrine and remained faithful to the assemblies of Christ. So John is in essence exposing their moral character. How they were hypocrites. They spoke a lot about the love of God, but they did not practice it. They split the churches. They left. And then they kept on preying on the people after they left. And they disdained those that remained and didn't follow them. That's the historical context. But how loosely is this term used today? I love God. How often have you heard somebody say, oh, they love God so much. Oh, he loves God. And what does that mean? What does that really mean? It's something that you can say that no one can contest you. You know, I've heard this said about people who have no commitment to the local church, show no faithfulness to this institution of the church, who don't have any commitment to studying the Bible, to prayer, or all those basic duties of a Christian, and yet they'll say, but they love God. They love God so much. It's a very loose statement. John destroys that statement. And he gives a very strong argument to justify this assertion. So I want to take a look at this assertion. He says, when he seeks to justify it, he says, for he who loveth not his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. So I want to make 6 points about John's argument here. 6 points. And I'll interweave observations as we go through the 6 points. First of all, the hatred that John is speaking about here is that of a sustained and continuous condition. We get a better understanding of what John is talking about when we look at the phrase, whom he can see. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he hath seen. This is expressed in a perfect tense. And it denotes this permanent condition that continues from time past. The unloved brother continues to be in the sight of the one who's not loving. In other words, it's a situation where you're continually seeing this person you don't love. And this person is always in front of you. You continue to see him. It is a constant and sustained situation. So it's not something that's momentary. It's not something that's sporadic. It's this residing bitterness in the heart. This stubbornness and unwillingness to reconcile. It expresses a contempt for a brother or sister. Now, we all have moments of anger, of bitterness, and hatred. I don't think there's anybody that can deny that. A Christian can experience times when we're annoyed with our brother or sister. We're mad with them. We won't speak to them. And we'll have nothing to do with them. But this hatred, if you are a Christian, cannot be sustained. Christians know it is sin. Christians are convicted of it, that it's sin. And their conscience haunts them if it's not reconciled. They can't sustain, be sustained in that condition of hatred. A Christian is always ready to reconcile. Then they must and they have to reconcile their differences before God. A Christian cannot, by the very nature of regeneration and being born again, a Christian cannot continue in hatred and in bitterness. John says, we know we've passed from death unto life because we love the brethren. And he that loveth not his brother abides in death. If you remain in that state, there's nothing to assure you that you're a child of God. In fact, the evidence points exactly opposite. Now, the second point is that John is arguing from the lesser to the greater to fortify his point here. If people cannot carry out the lesser requirement to love their fellow believers whom they have seen, they cannot carry out the greater requirement to love God whom they have not seen. It is assumed here. It is assumed that it is easier to love the visible man than the invisible God. And we might not make that assumption, and I'll get into that momentarily. But it is assumed here, and with John, that it's easier to love that which we see. And if we are not doing the easier, then how can we do the more difficult? If we fail in the easier task, it is absurd to think that we will succeed in the more difficult task. Our love to God, John is saying, whom we cannot see, is validated by our love to one another whom we can see. You see, the love of God and love for God is a visible manifestation. Now, if you're like me, you may be a little deluded. You might start to think, it's the opposite. I can love God easier than I can love my fellow man. Because man's a sinner. Man can offend. Man has a lot of flaws. It's a lot easier to love God, who's perfect, who has no flaws, whose very essence is compassion and sympathy and tender mercies. Isn't it easier to love God? John assumes that it's not. It's more difficult to love God. We're speaking of human terms here. I mean, aren't there so many obstacles and hindrances in loving one another? But there's nothing objectable in loving God. Now think about what you've done at this point, if you're like me. At that point, you begin to distance the love of God from the love of the brethren. At that point, when you say it's easier to love God than to love the brethren, you've separated the two. And that's exactly what John, and precisely what John is arguing against. You cannot separate the two. You cannot. Because if we start to do that, then we start to think we can love God and have a whole lot of flaws in loving the brethren. We can start to think loving the brethren is only secondary. It's something maybe optional. We can start to pick and choose the brothers and sisters we want to love and those we don't want to love. Very dangerous to think like that. And I bet you every one of you here has thought that way. That it's easier to love God than to love our fellow man. And I tell you this. Loving God is the Christian's highest calling and the hardest task. Loving God is not easier. It is the most difficult thing for a Christian to do. The most difficult thing for a Christian to do is to love God. To love God with all our soul, with all our strength, with all our might. Who's done that here? Who has that love for God? Christ says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. Who keeps God's commands? Is that an easy thing to do? Loving God is the most difficult thing we can do as Christians. Don't be deluded into thinking it's some sentimental feeling. It's how we feel about God. Love is expressed in your obedience to His commandments. If you love God, you keep His commandments. And if you're not keeping His commandments, if you're not living an obedient life before God, you don't love God. You may say you love God, but it means nothing. You see, it's because we cannot see God with the naked eye. That is why John says it's so difficult to love God. No man, he says in verse 12, has seen God at any time. But God can be seen in the lives who demonstrate love to others. The unseen God reveals Himself in His people by manifesting His love through them. A Christian learns to love God by loving those who he actually can see. God loved us when we were sinners, and we must learn to love one another in the same way. I must treat my brothers and sisters in the same way that God treats me. By practicing a self-sacrificial love, I begin to understand the love of God and the sacrifice of Christ for my sin. It comes down to this. If we are loving our brothers and sisters, we are loving Christ. Now, the third point I want to make is that there is an overriding premise from which John draws this conclusion. And that is, loving God and loving the brethren cannot be separated. They are mutually inclusive. And you can't have one without the other. And John has labored throughout the entire epistle in all three social tests of love to bring this home, that love for God and love for the brethren cannot be separated. And I'd like to walk through that. If you go to 1 John chapter 2, verse 9 and 11, he says, "He that saith he's in the light," that person who says he knows God, that person who says that God dwells within him, and he is in the light, and he hateth his brother, is in darkness even until now. He that loveth his brother abideth in light. If you know God, you abide in the light. You love your brother. See the connection? And there is none occasion of stumbling in him. But he that hateth his brother is in darkness, and walks in darkness, and knoweth not where he goes, because that darkness hath blinded his eyes. Then chapter 3, verse 10 and 11. "In this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. He's saying you're of the devil. You're a child of the devil if you don't love your brothers and sisters. For this is the message that we have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. When John talks about that message that they've heard from the beginning, he's talking about that preeminent apostolic doctrine and part of that body of doctrine was the love of the brethren. That which they heard from the beginning. We know in verse 14 of chapter 3, we know that we have passed from death unto life. We know that we have eternal life because we love the brethren. And he that loveth not the brother abides in death. He drives it home almost ad nauseum. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. If you're born of God and you know God, you will love one another. Chapter 4, verse 12, no man hath seen God at any time. But if we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and His love is perfected in us. That's the manifestation of our love to God. That He dwells in us and we love one another. See, the two cannot be divorced. Love to God and love to one another. You cannot separate them, and that is the overriding principle in all of John's social tests of love. 4, verse 16, and we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. And again, 19, we love because he first loved us. The fourth point I'd like to make is found in verse 21, that John summarizes all this in the form of a commandment. And this is the commandment we have from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also. Love to God and love to the brethren form a single commandment. And they are united together. They are inseparably coupled together. Now, our Lord was asked, what is the greatest commandment? And he combines Deuteronomy 6:4 and Leviticus 19:18 to give his answer. Mark chapter 12, 29 and 31. And Jesus answered him, the first of all the commandments is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love to God, love to your neighbor. And then now he says, there is none other commandment, singular. There is none other commandment, singular, greater than these. In Matthew, he will say the same thing and state, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Love to God, love to one another. They cannot be separated. They form one commandment. My fifth point. Love for God and hatred for a brother cannot coexist in the heart of a true believer. They are mutually exclusive and completely incompatible. It's impossible for one to love God and hate his brother or sister in this way. It's impossible to love God and hate your brother in the same heart. It's a moral contradiction. And finally, my sixth point. And this is presupposed in the text. John's assertion presupposes that man is made in the image and likeness of God. Man is God's image. And therefore, to hate man is tantamount to hating God. Genesis 9:6, a verse that deals with the capital punishment of a murderer. He says, "Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, and this is the reason why. For in the image of God made he man." Murder, which is the very essence of hatred, the very epitome of hatred, murder. To murder someone is to destroy the image of God. Because if you hate God's image, you hate God. And that's, and the ultimate expression of that is murder. And that offense is so grievous that it requires your life. And it's the only justification, the only biblical justification for capital punishment. Here's another one. James 3, verses 9 and 10. Showing the contradiction. "Therewith bless we God, even the Father." Oh, we love God. We know God. "And therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God," or after the image and likeness of God. "Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. You cannot curse man who's made in God's image." You see, we must not see the sin. For we're all sinners. We have to see the image of God as contemptible and as worthless as you might think someone is. They are still God's image, to which we owe them honor and respect and love. Calvin said, "It is a false boast when anyone says he loves God but neglects his image which is before his eyes." That's a bold assertion that John's making. "If any man say he loves God and hates his brother, he's a liar." So John was very clear, right? Not pulling any punches. There's no way to misunderstand that. So that's my sixth point. And hopefully I've given you something to think about. And let's close in prayer.